You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 123 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Cashel Company. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with the Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
On today's show, we speak with highly regarded hunter, judge, and trainer Sissy Wicks as part two of our From the Judge's Booth mini-series. We learn about the retired racer-friendly competition, the Midwest Racehorse Roundup, with Morgan Kastner and Annika Greeny. We then get a training tip from Winnie Morgan Nemeth from New Vocations and wrap with our Adoptable Horse of the Week. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you're listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Are you so excited that the sun, like, doesn't set, like, at 4 o'clock anymore?
Yes. Yeah, like, I can actually, like, almost work a full workday without having to come back and do more work in the evening to make up for the time that I've lost by going to the barn early.
I know.
Thanks, RRP, like, for being a good employer and letting me do that.
I have been loving getting off work at 5, and it's still sunny, and I don't have to wear a flashlight on my head just to go get my horse anymore.
You are probably the cutest coal miner I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you. I do love
a headlamp, though. I also forgot the time's going to change again soon.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
I was
sorry. Someone will get that for me.
Looking ahead at the sunset thing, and I was like, so Eric can start riding again pretty soon, which will be good. Because otherwise, he's only riding on the weekends.
At least he's still riding. I'm like,
he's trying. Yeah.
Zach's getting antsy. He's ready to come back to the barn. He's a fair weather rider.
Oh, buddy. Well, you know.
I do dressage. I can't blame him. I'm not setting a good example.
We're going to revoke his horse girl card if he doesn't start getting there in the bad weather.
We'll see what happens. Okay. I'm definitely not buying a horse till he shows up in bad weather.
Oh, I don't know. Today's featured adoptable horse is going to tempt you, though. I don't show that one to Zach.
I know. He can't see him. He's so gorgeous.
Yeah, but it's been really nice, and it's been warm enough and dry enough that because I don't like to ride on our pastures until it's pretty well dried out because, you know, it's our pastures and I'm going to tear them up. But I did get Jopper out for a grand total of 3 minutes of trotting before he felt like he was going to explode. So I decided to go home. So, you know, baby steps.
And I really have been enjoying your posts. Like, I know that you sent a nice little PSA about calling an adult friend when you're going to go ride your spicy horse and there's no other adults. I also do that. I'll like text Zach. I'm like, hey, if I don't text you in 30 minutes, I need you to call me to make sure I'll respond.
Yeah, my sister-in-law. Well, she lives like on the farm. So I was like, okay, listen, she is the closest, like physically closest person in case like I legitimately don't turn up in half an hour. Like, and she's very good. She was like, I was just about to text you the other day when I was like, yeah, I bailed after my 3 minutes of trotting. It was like a full half hour ride, but it was the second half was a lot of like fancy dancing, which is this is just how Chopper lives his life in the spring. It's at this point I've had him for this long. I'm like, this is not going to change. So I just, every spring you just diffuse the bomb all over again.
Like Astrid's pretty steady Eddie in springtime change. Like she's just the same expressive horse all year round. And even her stuff isn't too bad though. But
that's good.
I
try to cut Jopper off before it gets bad. So I don't know how bad it can get. And I don't want to find out.
Mine's too lazy to really put an effort.
Oh, that's nice.
So like the most it's going to be is like, I will fast trot and then go into a canter, but she just canters in a circle. So it's like, you just kind of wait for it to be done. If she really commits to the cause and then it's over.
Yeah. No, I have gotten taken off and like the running buck. And I'm like, on like dubious ground. And also there's like dips and holes everywhere.
That's
like,
so fair. I do have the nice sand arena. Like, it's a little more predictable.
Right. Yeah. On 20 acres too. So I'm like, ooh, there's a lot of places I could end up. So I'm going to.
She gives me a nice equivalent of the middle finger buck. It's a solid one. And then she just plants her feet after like Did you learn? We're still going to go. I just ride through
I've
it.
I've made my statement. Yeah.
Yes. It's very much a statement book. And then it's over. And then she's like, fine, I'll do it, but I won't do it pretty. I was like, okay, you do what you got to do. That's really the best, or I should say worst, that she'll do.
Yeah, she should probably not meet Jobber, because he'll be like, oh, if you try this, this is
worth it. Tell her all the secrets. But she has been quite persnickety. That's a good word. She is back into work, which I'm very grateful for.
Good.
We have recovered from our injuries, although she pretends that she's not. She liked being a pasture pet for the last 6 weeks.
Oh,
she really enjoyed just being pampered and cold hosed and get to have liniment on her. And I sit with her in an indoor arena and let her just play with everything around. We liked that much better. We like working. So she has been very opinionated about coming back to work. Mm. And I was very kind. On the President's Day sale, I bought one of the SATA pads that have the resistance bands that go on the butt.
Ooh.
It's not the Equiband, but it's like a knockoff of it. And she is not happy. She tried to buck it off. We did this all in the lunge because I chose life.
Yeah, that's wise.
Because I've done like the long lines around the butt before, and she just stops and she's like, you can remove that, then I'll go for it. She doesn't want her butt touched, really. That it didn't go away, and I still made her move. She bucked around a circle with it, and then that didn't get it off. So then we reared and bucked. We had the full teeter-totter.
Nice.
And lasted about 2 minutes, and then she was tired. And she's like, I will trot now. And she put her head in this, like, dragging her nose. Like, nice Western trot. It was really lovely. It's like, all that, and that's what we get out of it. I guess
point of those, right, is to, like, you know, I'm probably misusing these, but like, you know, the rear, that's a very strong, you know, muscle building exercise. So
I know, like, she really worked her core
in mind.
So I mean, I think I benefited out of all of this, to be honest.
But that's what I tell myself when I see Shorty and Jobber like fully straight up in the air, like trying to punch each other in the face. I'm like, good for your core, boys. Keep it up.
Yes.
Keep working.
But I'm excited. Say,
the TIP, the Thoroughbred Incentive Program, they have a way of keeping you motivated at just the right time. So they put out their 2023 Performance Award results on our recording day, which is the very end of February. Just when you're thinking, like, I don't know if like spring is actually going to get here. So fortunately, that came at a good time for me to be like, yeah, I'm fired up for 2024 again. So
what were the results? You have to tell
us. Yeah. So out of like 60 some Western horses, it was really cool because my friend Wendy, who worked very, very hard in 2023, she won like by a landslide. She had earned a ton of points. So she was the top Western horse. But Jobber was third. He was the third highest Western horse for all of the TIP Performance Awards, and Eric and Shorty were fourth, right behind us. So that was really cool.
I love that.
Yeah, and we were the champion and reserve champion other.
Congrats.
The other, I think, is like the place where all our cow horse class results go, because they don't have a cow horse division, so we just put them into other. So I love wandering around and saying I have the champion other horse, but it's fine.
There you go. There you go. I love it. Congratulations to you and Eric.
Yeah. And I think, when you hit the show ring this year, you got to make sure you send yours in. Because I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. We only did the one show just to make sure she even enjoyed it. And she did.
She really did, right?
She had a good time.
You got to do a bunch this year.
Yeah. So we actually very ambitiously didn't realize how quick it's coming. Signed up for a clinic in mid-March. So I was like, oh, we have 3 weeks and I've had two rides. We're ready.
A few more rounds with those resistance bands, you're gonna be good to go. Don't worry.
it's definitely a good motivator, and it's gonna be a fun clinic. So it's actually riding a dressage test with a judge, and we have an hour slot, so we'll run through the test and kind of get to nitpick it together. I anticipate she's gonna be amazing the first 20 minutes, then it could get really interesting, but everything is content. That theme has not gone away.
We need a sponsor to get us some GoPros so we can keep the content rolling like 24/7.
Yes. If you guys know or want us to be recording those things, let us know. Let us know if you want to see us survive fucking Bronx, screaming hormonal mares, all that good stuff. We're here for it. We're here for the content, but
always content.
Yes. But super excited for spring, everything to come. But you know what else I'm excited for, Kristen, is we have part two of our Judges Booth mini series. And I am thrilled. I am really loving this series. And also thank you to all the listeners who posted or commented or reached out to us how much they loved the first installment. It meant a lot because I think we were very excited, but to see that you're also learning and enjoying the segment motivates us more. So we hope to keep bringing you more judges to hear about different disciplines and maybe, who knows, you'll try something new this year too, but also hoping you get some good content to help you perform the way you're hoping to this year in the show ring. So we have a hunter judge this time, Sissy Wicks. That's going to be awesome. And then another Race Wars competition. And this one's open to thoroughbreds and standardbreds. So I'm really excited for this episode.
And everything else.
And everything else.
Quarter horses, Arabians, paints, Appaloosas. If you can race it, you can bring it to this horse show. So stay tuned 100%. For that segment.
A very inclusive retired racehorse show. So excited to give you all the details on that. But before we get there, we're going to hear from our premier sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products.
Frequently Asked Questions brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. My older gelding is having trouble holding his weight, and I'm afraid to feed him any more senior feed. He gets all the hay he wants. What do you recommend? Many older horses are eventually unable to maintain acceptable body condition on a typical diet of hay and grain alone. When you want to add calories without the risk of digestive upset, we recommend Equijoule Rice Bran. It is an excellent source of easy-to-digest calories for older horses. The fat in Equijoule is a concentrated energy source. It will increase calorie consumption and improve body condition without risking grain overload. Start your older horse on a quarter pound per day and work up to 1 or 2 pounds per day over a few weeks. Remember, small meals fed 3 to 4 times per day will help your older horse better utilize the feed. You can learn more about Equijoule at kppusa.com. Got questions about your feeding program? We can help. Email Karen at questions@kppusa.com or call us at 859-873-2974.
Joy, I'm very excited to keep our Judges Booth series going. Listeners really enjoyed our first installment last episode with Lauren Annette representing dressage. And I'm very pumped to have with us today Sissy Wicks representing the hunter jumper world. Sissy, you have a background both on the equestrian side and the racing side. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about your background and what's brought you here.
What's brought me here is that I have quite an interest in retired thoroughbreds. My husband is a bloodstock agent. Our families, well, primarily his family has been in racing for generations. We are commercial breeders. We occasionally have a racehorse. I grew up galloping at the racetrack and breaking yearlings, and I'm 112 years old. So when we were coming up, we only had thoroughbreds, and I have an innate and lifelong love for that breed and those animals. And that led to my involvement with the Retired Racehorse Project, which is why I am here today. And I also have been involved in the hunter jumper world since I was a child. And as everybody knows, that world has evolved, unfortunately, away from the thoroughbred. But we are actively trying to get the thoroughbred re-involved with the hunter jumper world. I am a rider. I don't compete anymore, but I still ride every day, which is really the joy of my life. I'm a trainer and I'm a judge. I'm on the board of the United States Hunter Jumper Association. I sit on a lot of committees for the United States Equestrian Federation. So I do governance work, I do training, I do teaching, I do riding. And I do the Retired Racehorse Project.
So you are, you were just a Renaissance woman of the
equestrian world. I don't know why I say yes to everything, but I have a hard time saying no. So here we are.
Well, we're glad you said yes to joining us today.
On I am too. Thank you for having me.
So, Sissy, you are a very highly regarded large R judge. And last time we introduced, casually, we're like, Lauren Annette is a small R judge. And I realized that for listeners who don't compete in recognized competition, they may not know what that small R, large R designation means. So can you explain that quickly for us?
Sure.
Give us the TLDR.
Sure. There are two levels of licenses. And the United States Equestrian Federation, the USEF, licenses the officials. Actually, they license officials for all of the disciplines that they recognize, for which they are the NGB. So the small R is oftentimes an introductory license. So it is people who are just getting into judging. Sometimes people have no desire to get the next level, which is called a large R. Most people do continue with their education, their experience, and end up obtaining the large R. The small R is, again, kind of introductory. They can only officiate certain classes at certain levels. The higher end of the sport, you have to have a large R if you're going to judge the what we call the recognized divisions, the horse of the year divisions, bigger horse shows, et cetera, et cetera. So that's basically it's two licenses.
Okay, gotcha. So if you're seeing this written, like if you scroll down to the show notes right now, as you're listening, listeners, you'll see literally a capital R in quotes is the large R. And you'll, you know, if you also ever see a small R, it's a lowercase R. So you say out loud, large R, small R, but it's uppercase, lowercase. So that took me a little while to figure it out. And I was like, what am I looking at?
Yeah, and it's recorded and registered, which to me makes no sense. I mean, I feel like they pulled two words out, a recorded judge or registered judge. So
welcome to the
small R is recorded. Yeah, small R is recorded, large R is registered, but we're just known as small or large R's.
All right. Well, there we go. Now we've cleared the air on that one. So make it a little easier for people to figure out what they're looking at. So Sissy, as a rider, what is your favorite kind of horse to ride? You know, either by breed or just, you know, your type of ride that you prefer.
Well, I guess it depends on what you're doing. I mean,
good question.
If I'm out fox hunting, which I haven't done in a zillion years, but or going cross country, or my daughter and I did a trip out west two summers ago, I guess, and there were some small thoroughbreds there that we were using to herd the cattle, and that was amazing. And so it really depends what you're doing. The thoroughbred in the hunter world right now is a little bit of an anomaly. The kind of thoroughbred who looks and goes and behaves to the norm right now, to the ideal right now. So if I'm having a hunter, if I'm riding a hunter, I would probably choose a warm blood. Mm-hmm. For the jumper ring, a lot of thoroughbreds are quite appropriate, and for so many other things, thoroughbreds are so appropriate.
I think it's really interesting that you say thoroughbreds are an anomaly in the hunter world right now, because I agree with you. You see it on social media all the time. If you're not a part of that world, like you see all the warm bloods. And I think in some people who have the thoroughbreds, like, can I compete at that level? What would you say is a good characteristic for thoroughbreds to be able to compete with warm bloods in the hunter ring?
That's a good question. And I don't want to tell everybody that a thoroughbred can't compete in the hunter world. Of course it can. And I think as with any animal, when you're competing, choose the level at which you will find success. And success doesn't always mean ribbons, but success means you and your horse had a good experience. You and your horse learned something. You and your horse came out of it feeling like you had accomplished something and had some goals for the future. I would say in the late 80s, beginning of the 1990s, things started to gravitate away from the thoroughbred. Mm. And the palette of the hunter world started to turn toward quieter, heavier boned horses. And that has been an evolution that has continued to today. So if you have a thoroughbred that you think you want to compete at a level, and let's say there are many, many options for people with hunters. You can show locally, whether or not it's recognized by USEF. You can show locally on your local circuit, which is great. You can maybe move up to the next level, which would be a more competitive level, a regional horse show. And if you want to know those definitions, look it up. But regional horse shows are local horse shows that belong to the USEF. Or you can move up to national or premier horse shows. But the key with a hunter, and I don't care what breed it is that easier they are, the quiet mind is appropriate to that, to our discipline for hunters right now. So it has to be calm. It has to have a demeanor of being relaxed as it jumps around the ring. And that, to me, is the most important thing. I would say the last, 40 years, 30 years, the thoroughbred got so light in its bone, and that's a whole other discussion, but they were kind of breeding for two-year-olds and breeding for horses to come to hand so fast, and we got away from the big bone thoroughbreds that I grew up with. And I think that pendulum is swinging the other way, where we're seeing horses with more bone that run longer and aren't so as precocious as two-year-olds. And that will absolutely play into the hunter market. So we'll have horses that don't look like, that aren't weedy 15-2 thoroughbreds, which is, again, not the norm right now. We have big warm bloods to compete against. So they're taller, maybe they're 16 hands and over. They're bigger bone, their way of going is a little bit smoother. When you show a hunter, you have a course, and within that course, the jumps are set based on a 12-foot stride. So if you go to a horse show and you look at a course, they will have the number of feet between the jumps. So if you see 72 feet, all right, that is a 5-stride line based on a 12-foot stride. So you do 6 for takeoff, 5 strides, 6 or 6 for landing, 5 strides, 6 for takeoff. So 72 feet is a 5-stride line, and that's what the judge is going to expect. If your horse is small and has a very short stride, you're going to have to go faster to get down that line than the person with a larger horse with a bigger stride. So yeah,
and then you lose that relaxed look.
Exactly. You don't want to have to scamper around. Now, in the jumper ring, other than combinations, other than in and outs or triple combinations, really doesn't matter how many strides you get down a straight line or a diagonal line. So the thoroughbred, I think, is a little easier to adopt or adapt, whatever word you want to use, to that discipline, to the jumper discipline.
That's super interesting, because I have my thoroughbred mare and I don't ride or compete in the hunters. I'm a dressage rider. She's not traditionally built for dressage. She's doesn't have like that uphill look to her that you traditionally see. But it's just what I like to do. And I don't have any goals to go Grand Prix or anything like that. But when people look at her, I've been told like, oh, she's built like a hunter. And I find it interesting because I've never seen a hunter who looks like her because she's so fine boned, but maybe they need more of the jumper side of things.
Yeah, I mean, not knowing what she looks like, we love hunters to have the headset of a long neck and a nose that kind of pokes out, and you don't have to go around and package it and fix its frame, but to have a horse that's kind of naturally in front of itself with a nice head and neck set, not too upright, not downhill. So maybe that's what they're referring to with your horse.
That would make sense because that is a description of her. So I just never knew because like when I see photos of hunters, like they're beautiful to watch. But I've just never pictured her in that ring. So I'm like, what do you mean by that? So you answered my questions. That's really interesting to hear. So I guess that kind of goes into our other question of, you know, riders of ex-racehorses occasionally feel guilty or blaming perceived bias from judges that maybe feel like they're unlikely to place because they have a thoroughbred. Would you say that's true, or why do you think that could be happening?
I don't think judges care what breed you're riding. I think they care about what the performance of your horse is. So I would not support anybody who wants to blame the judge for being prejudicial against thoroughbreds, but the judge might not like the round of the horse that, again, has to scamper, looks nervous, looks like it's pressed beyond what it wants to do, looks like it doesn't want to walk in the ring and go on a loose rein and have that kind of relaxed, easy stride elegance that we want to see in the hunters. So, again, for people, I would love to find a thoroughbred to compete in the hunter. So if anybody has one, find me. But they have to be of a type, just like they have to be of a type to do anything else. So again, bigger boned, good brain, quiet, that kind of thing. So I don't espouse that there's a blanket statement that judges are prejudicial against thoroughbreds. I think that it's a little bit hard to find the thoroughbred that fits into the hunter mold right now. So for those of you that are repurposing racehorses, that are getting them ready to resell, just keep that in mind. I mean, point your horse to whatever discipline it's going to be successful in, whether it's dressage or eventing or jumpers or hunters or polo or fox hunting or, you know, whatever it is, because there are so many things to do with them. And a good athlete is a good athlete. But just like with us, I mean, we might be great tennis players and not very good soccer players. So, you know, figure out where they're going to excel.
I think it's tough too, you know, as a competitor standpoint, because like you can watch your own round that your friend videoed for you, but you're not sitting in the booth watching, you know, 70 other rounds that are all competing against you, right? So I know that like from the judge's standpoint, it's hard to know, you know, exactly like, well, I don't know what she saw because you didn't see the other 73 rounds, you know? So it's like what I usually assume happens is that there's some part of a ride that doesn't quite, you know, like you said, it's not quite up to that standard set by the warm bloods. And if you're already having to maybe hurry a little bit to get your stride or really pull, you know, if you have a bigger strided horse and you're really pulling for those same strides, you know, that's not going to be as harmonious of a round, even if it feels like it's the best that you can do yourself, right?
Yeah. And if it's the best you can. Yeah. And if it's exactly. So let's back up a second. The job of the judge and the task of the judge is to order the class. So we are supposed to have the best round be first, and then down the list of results from there. So, and when people are throwing scores, which we do now at in the premier horse shows, many premier national horse shows, when you're actually scoring around, it seems to baffle people why a round could get an 84 one day and a 80 the next. Well, it all depends on where you want them to fit in your stagger, your order, your results. So yes, it's subjective, and you have to fit in, your performance has to fit into the complexion of the class. And it's very easy to blame the judge. Oh, they didn't like me. Oh, they do a bad job. Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. But I would look around, see what the ones that are succeeding are doing, how they differ from your horse, whether you need to drop down a level, whether you need to go home and do some homework and try to either get somebody to help you or get somebody who's can give you a good critique of what you're doing that knows what they're looking at, and then readdress it, you know, try it again. But there is no inherent bias, I will tell you that.
Yeah. It's easy to pick at that, right? To be like, well, I don't want to go home and do the thing. I just want to complain about the judge, which is
oh my gosh. And you know, here in Wellington, it's sort of what happens every day of why didn't Susie do better? Because the judge stinks. Not, you know, Susie needs to go home and ride without stirrups for 2 weeks and she might be able to not bobble around on her horse. But it's easier for a trainer or whoever's involved to decide that the judge is bad rather than decide that they need to do something training wise or mounting wise or whatever it is. So that's the reality of our world right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's tough in a subjective sport, which, you know, like dressage, I know Joy's a dressage rider. It's subjective, but not in the same way, you know, and I ride ranch horses, which is very different, but in some ways very similar because, you know, that type of horse that you like to see in the hunter ring that, you know, can hold itself with a relaxed top line and just go in and casually do his job. That's actually quite similar to what I would like to see in a ranch horse. So like at the makeover, as an example, I'll look at hunters going in and I'm like, oh, I would love to put a Western saddle on that one. And I don't ever want to offend anybody, you know, by
saying that. I love the ranch horses. I love that. So I've judged the makeover, I don't know how many times, 3 times. I can't remember. But at any rate, I love that discipline. And then that really inspired me to take my daughter and go out to the wilds of California and do a week on a ranch. I mean, those horses are incredible. And I think that thoroughbred mind is perfect for that work because it's complicated and they have to really think on the job and they have to be nimble. And I can't give you enough credit for that.
Yeah, but also relax too at the same time. You know, like if you have a rushy kind of anxious ranch horse, you're going to get your cattle all stirred up. And, you know, like so even your show ring ranch, you know, it's all supposed to be in a working style. And it's that same as that hunter. You want it to just kind of come in and do its job and, you know, be casual, but also be athletic. So I think those disciplines are actually a lot more similar other than the cattle part, and the tech and everything else.
Be attentive, but don't overreact. It's really cool. Agreed.
Yeah, cool. So do you have any advice then for, you know, riders who are prepping their thoroughbred for, you know, the hunter specifically is what we've been talking about the most, but, you know, also advice for the equitation ring or the jumper ring? You know, what advice can you give to riders of, we tend to go to thoroughbreds a lot, but really we have listeners representing all racehorse breeds. Mm-hmm. So what's a good way that those riders can prepare at home to bring the best quality product to the show ring?
The best way obviously is to have somebody who you can trust and have that person be your mentor, trainer, ground person, whatever you call it. So make sure that you have somebody on your team, and in your sphere that can help you and guide you and tell you what they're seeing from the ground. I mean, there is no rider I know that doesn't have a ground person, not one. So find your person that can help you, and hopefully it'll be a trainer that's adept with thoroughbreds or whatever breed we're going to talk about and knows how to get them best trained and ready to go to a competition. And just again, make sure you place your horse in an appropriate discipline at an appropriate level, etc. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Don't take your horse to something that it's not prepared for or not wired for. That's not fair to the horse. That's not fair to everybody else involved. For the makeover specifically, since we're going to be, before we know it, winding toward that, get some experience. Make sure you take that horse to off the property to another venue that has the kind of atmosphere that the Kentucky Horse Park has or wherever you're going. So do your homework. Rehearse, 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 rehearse. It's just like actors do for the stage. Rehearse, 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 so that when your day comes, you know how to do it.
Absolutely.
And it's, I mean, there are some hunters that I've judged in the makeover that could compete anywhere. That's how good they are. And the riders and the trainers have taken their time with them and they're beautifully prepared and it's really great. And then there are some horses I think, oh, they should be next door. They should be doing something else. Mm-hmm. So again, find someone that can give you some advice and channel you in the right direction for your animal. Because there's a lot to do out there. You know, there's a lot of choices that we have now in competitions and levels. And it's a big world out there.
It is. Yeah. I have one more question for you that I thought about as we were discussing. What is your take on like the thoroughbred leagues or the thoroughbred specific classes within, you know, the hunter jumper world versus
your thoroughbred
in open competition?
If I won the lottery, like the lottery, I would fund a thoroughbred league because I think it's kind of spotty. And I'm sure people that are involved in this are going to be unhappy with me, but get in line. I wish they were better supported. I wish they being thoroughbred specific classes. I wish they were better attended. I wish there were a whole plethora of series for these horses. So if you're in Michigan, you can do your thoroughbred hunter jumper series. And at the end, you go to the finals and there's, let's say, a $5,000 class or a $10,000 class. Same thing, like Fairhill, Maryland has a big thoroughbred series, but imagine if they were regional all over the country, and it would make it, it would be something everybody would strive for. I mean, everybody I know, just like people flock to the makeover show. So we've had some stops and starts with that, and it hasn't fleshed out the way I had hoped it would. I really had hoped that it would be very popular. And I think it probably depends on where you are. I'm sure some of these series are much more popular than others, but I love to see a class, a division, again, a championship series dedicated to the thoroughbred, because it's very hard to compete, you know, with that type of horse against what I see here in Wellington, Florida every day, mm-hmm. which should not take away from the value and the future of the thoroughbred in sport, because they're amazing.
Do you ever see it swinging back the other way, like the way that styles and trends change?
I don't see it as much in the hunter world. I love it. I love to see the fact that it is reemerging to a greater extent in the eventing mm-hmm. world. A lot of the results are based on the time. So it's the dressage and then the time doing the cross country. So I love the fact that the breed is reemerging in prominence in the eventing world. I mean, that was their niche when I was a kid was the eventing, because they were fast and they were brave and they could do the roads and tracks and they could, you know, go all day stamina wise. And of course that discipline has changed a lot, but I do love the fact that I see a lot of the top riders wanting thoroughbreds and using thoroughbreds. I think that's a great thing. I don't see a hybrid warm blood and thoroughbred hunter situation in the near future. I do see it more in the jumper ring for sure.
Interesting. And what is interesting too is, you know, as we look at the breeding of a lot of warm bloods, there's a lot of thoroughbred in them, but there's just mm-hmm. still something about the warm blood part that makes it so well suited to the current style in the hunters. So,
well, I almost is this a place, a standard bred, the way they're being bred today, like a good moving standard bred, since they tend to be bigger boned, is that an opportunity for them as they start to rise in the future too? That's what comes to mind.
With so much emphasis on the canter, like a good,
yeah,
well, that I bet that we'll see one someday. Yeah, I think you're
for the person who does harder. It. Call us; we will put your success story up.
Right? Let me preface this by saying I'm very ignorant about standard breds, but my impression is that their headset is quite high. So from the wither up, it's a bit high. Their neck is put on low, and then their headset is high. And that is not particularly what we're looking for. And yeah, I don't know what their canter looks like, because I've never seen one canter, but the canter really determines the strength of the jump. Mm-hmm. Period. Yeah.
And that, you know, you need that ideal stride length to make the lines work. So
you need a balanced, organized canter, and maybe some of them have it. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see one someday. I mean, someday someone's going to show up with a kick-ass standardbred and like put us all to shame. And I cannot wait to see it. But I do think it'll be a challenge for sure.
I think it's for sure a challenge. I think
it's a canter heavy discipline. Like, it's all built on that canter stride.
And so, I'm curious too, like, even just using good foundational brood mares that might come off the track, because I've seen some really nice purpose bred thoroughbreds who, if you told me they were a thoroughbred, I wouldn't believe you without the paperwork. Just the way they're built, they are that bigger boned and very calm in nature, like probably closer to what you were talking about before, Sissy, of what you were used to seeing before warm bloods really took over. So that might even be a route of just using like a purpose bred broodmare who's coming off the track to kind of get that look. If a thoroughbred's what you love and you want to see them in the hunter ring, that might be your best bet.
Exactly. You know, your big bone thoroughbred coming off the track, I mean, breed it mm-hmm. to a warm blood, because that's, I mean, I've done that a couple of times, and the outcome has been great. So that's something else to consider if you have a mare that's big boned and beautiful. And although in that situation, if she's sound, you could probably put her into the riding disciplines here.
Yeah. I love it. This is incredibly insightful.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, let's just have a whole episode of talking with Sissy for sure. Because I have other
friends. We'll have her back for some training tips. I would love to pick your brain.
Training tips. And then also, yeah, just, you know, we've had some guests on to talk about, you know, how they've seen the breed change. And I think we could launch into another half hour discussion, which unfortunately we don't have time for on our show today. But yeah, we'd love to have you back, Sissy, to talk about, you know, the changes you've seen in both the show ring over the years and the breed itself, you know, the difference. You know, I know you mentioned that, like, hopefully we're starting to swing back away from these small fine boned thoroughbreds, but
yes. And I believe that we are. I mean, my husband and I are at many horse sales every year. And I do think that the body type is changing and the longevity of these horses is changing. And I hope so, but that's my prediction right here.
Put it out in the world and let's hope it comes back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love that breed. And I think that everybody who is in the position of breeding them and racing them has a responsibility to track them, to figure out what their lives become and put them into situations when you're finished racing them, or hopefully before you're finished racing them, where they're going to succeed and they're going to have a great next career, because there certainly are many options for them.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sissy, thank you so much for sharing your insight and joining us today. This was a really, really fun conversation. And yes, we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yes, I'd love
to. So much more we could talk about. Sissy, do you have a website or social media presence where people can continue to pick up nuggets of wisdom?
Yeah, I mean, Sissy Wicks on Instagram. It's SissyWickes. So send me a message.
All right. Giving you a follow right now.
Great.
Thanks very much, Sissy.
Thank you.
Well, I'm here with Tony from Cashel. You all know it from the ads you hear all the time on this show. But we're at the trade show, and this is the point of time in the year where we find out what's new coming out. So what's Cashel have new coming out?
Oh, we've got a great lineup of 32, 34 wool top pads.
So describe them.
Five different colors, real vibrant, bright, sharp-looking pads.
What makes them different?
Well, it's the fill. The wool felt on the inside is a natural felt, and the fleece on the bottom is 100% merino.
Oh, really? Okay. So these are soft and squishy pads.
Well, not real squishy, but soft, and they do absorb shock and saddle fit.
What would they retail for? What are those?
That's about 119.
That's the right price. Yeah. Anything else new with Cashel coming out?
Oh, we've got more saddle pads coming in the fall, new strap line coming in the fall. It's a two-tone that looks great with a great buckle set on it. We're always in development, so there's so many things, projects in the works.
What's still your most popular product? Is it still always the same things year after year?
Fly, you bet. Yeah, fly that's what we all.
That's how I knew you in the first place was fly. Fly masks. Yep.
Yeah. Many years ago, we were primarily fly masks and kind of had some tush cushions and a few odds and ends. Today, we've broadened that offering to saddlebags, strap, headstalls, breast collars, bell boots, leg protection, and it continues to grow.
Is there a place where somebody can go and see all the products?
CashelCompany.com will give you a good offering.
There you go. Well, thank you, Tony. It's been fun seeing you again.
Hey, thank you. Good to see you.
Joy, really excited to have with us today Annika Greeny and Morgan Kastner, and they are from the Midwest Racehorse Roundup, which came across our social media feeds a little bit earlier this winter. I remember we both went, oh my gosh, we got to talk to these girls and see what's going on here. So Midwest Racehorse Roundup is scheduled for August 17th and 18th this year at the North Dakota Horse Park in Fargo. And it looks like a pretty unique competition. So we're super excited to have Morgan and Annika with us. So welcome both of you to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
We're really excited to learn more about this event and what people can expect, you know, and how people can get involved, and like who all we're planning to see there. So which one of you came up with this idea and like what inspired you to get it all started?
So I had actually come up with the idea. It's a little bit of a funny story. I have a tendency to come up with big ideas overnight, literally. 2 years ago, I randomly woke up on a Tuesday and I said, I'm going to move from Fargo, North Dakota to Lexington, Kentucky. And I had never been before to Kentucky. So I booked a plane ticket, visited for 5 days, came home and moved a month later with my horses and my cat. In 2022,
that's awesome. Just went for it.
Yeah, just went for it. Everyone's like, you're just going for it. I'm like, yeah, if I don't like it, I can always move back home. So in 2022, I competed at the Thoroughbred Makeover with my mare Poppy, which was just an incredible experience overall. And then the Sunday night after the event, I couldn't sleep. And it was because I had this idea of creating a racehorse retraining event that included all breeds of racehorses. I thought the idea was a little bit crazy, and I just kind of let it fizzle out after a couple days. I competed again at the Thoroughbred Makeover in 2023, and the same thing happened. I couldn't sleep that Sunday night because of this idea I had. So the next day on Monday, I called Annika, who I talk to every single day about some random topic. I said, hey, I have this idea and you're probably going to think I'm crazy. And she probably said, yeah, you probably are a little crazy. And she went along with it. So I'm actually on the board for the North Dakota Horse Park Foundation, who is involved with the North Dakota Horse Park, which actually has racing there every single summer. And they've been wanting to find an idea to be involved in the community more. So I pitched them this idea and they were on board with it. And we got the track manager involved and he said, this is perfect because he's trying to get more events going at the track year round. And so between Annika coming on board, the foundation supporting it and the track manager, as well as North Dakota State University, who's also on the North Dakota Horse Park, we all came together to put this big idea together and put it into plan.
That's awesome. I love when, like, you know, you do something cool and that inspires you to do something else bigger, you know, and that's awesome. I'm glad that you are well rested enough by Sunday after the makeover to have good ideas, because I'm definitely not there. So
I didn't even show and I wasn't well rested enough to come up with big ideas.
So well done, Morgan. So I think what it's looking unique about this Midwest Racehorse Roundup, you know, is you guys have focused on five disciplines and your entries can enter all five of those if they so wish. So how did you land on, first tell us, you know, what disciplines are included and then tell us a little bit more about how you chose those ones in particular.
Yeah, so one of our main disciplines that we really talked about wanting to do was kind of showing how these horses have been developed on the ground. I mean, unfortunately, you often see that, you know, racehorses in chains, and that's kind of how people handle them. So we are calling it showmanship, but it's more of an ease of handling, because we both feel that groundwork is kind of one of those really important parts of training, and really want to emphasize kind of that aspect of horsemanship. We're also offering pleasure, which they have the option of riding either Western or English. Dressage, again, in Western or English equipment. Barrel racing and the trail. And then the trail will be more of an obstacle style format than just ground poles, or kind of more, we're trying to not move towards the Western trail type, but more towards how the makeover has obstacles. So the reason we chose these five disciplines were really to emphasize kind of the horsemanship and the versatility of the retired racehorses. A big thing about our event is showing that these horses can be ridden in any discipline. You don't have to go and take an off-track horse just for dressage or just for barrel racing. So the pleasure allows them to show off kind of a natural movement of their horse, so, while the dressage allows for the rider to more demonstrate kind of that ridden training aspect. Which then complements well with trail, kind of focusing on confidence and the maneuverability, and then more of the competitive edge in the barrel racing, kind of bringing up the atmosphere a little bit.
I like that. I like that it kind of like moves almost on its own, like racehorse training pyramid, you know, like you're hitting these disciplines, you know, we're clearly selected for different reasons, which is great. I was looking at the you know, the, your description of the events on your website. And I like that in this, you know, showmanship kind of handling class that like you may be sprayed with water, which initially when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, is someone just going to run through the arena with a hose? But it also makes sense, right? Like you have to show that, you know, the horses can be handled doing all sorts of different things and that, you know, they may also be asked to lunge. So I think that's really cool. You know, it's not just like, you know, like we've all done showmanship in 4-H, right? Like there's a reason for it, but it is also kind of a limiting discipline. So I think this, like approaching it from that overall groundwork, like handling aspect, that's a really cool way of approaching
it. It's very unique to do it that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. I grew up in 4-H and, you know, showing in showmanship, and I actually did it with my thoroughbred mare. And, you know, I always wanted just more out of it. I was like, well, you can train a horse for showmanship, but some of them can still have, you know, not the best ground manners. Right. We really wanted a class to show overall that, yes, my horse has good ground manners and that that's an important thing.
Love it.
I love it, too. I think it's a really nice approach. And I think it also parallels really well with other existing competitions, like, you know, the Thoroughbred Makeover at the RRP, like just ensuring people are using quality horsemanship and not just pushing these horses through for some sort of, you know, social glory by any means. So I think it's a really nice way to add some protection to the horse and make some education for riders too. So this is open to thoroughbreds and standardbreds. How did you come to that decision? Will they be competing, you know, against each other or with each other? Was there breed specific awards? How is that all going to work?
So we are actually opening it up to all breeds of racehorses. So thoroughbreds, standardbreds, and then, you know, there's the racehorses you don't hear about as much of, you know, quarter horses, appendix, paints, Arabians. So we're really trying to incorporate every breed
that
you know, isn't really talked about. And that's what we found to be a really important aspect of this, is we want to bring everyone together.
That's so awesome. I know we've had a lot of requests for diversity in racing on our podcast too. We've had featured Arabian racing and quarter horse racing. So I love that you're opening the competition up for them. And so they'll be competing against each other, just like a regular horse show, and just kind of coming in and showing cohesion with all of them? Or is there going to be breed specific awards too? Annika, maybe you can answer that one.
Yeah, so everybody will be competing just like you'd attend a normal show. And then we are hoping to be able to offer breed-specific special awards. And we're also hoping in our marketing to be able to attract specific racetracks to maybe sponsor an award for any horses that raced at their track. And then that would help, you know, I mean, in Fargo, we see both quarter horses and thoroughbreds racing. So that would open up an award specifically for those, regardless of their breed. And we're hoping to be able to get each racing industry breed specific organization involved too, to help sponsor some of those awards. So we're completely open to any organizations that want to get involved and in whatever format that they're interested in.
Amazing. And you talked about marketing. So what kind of reception have you had since putting this out? And what do you think attendance is looking at currently?
It's been really positive. The standardbred industry, the aftercare organizations there have been really excited. I know that they have definitely been wanting an event like this for a long time. And we've already heard from some of the bigger standardbred trainers, or aftercare trainers, I should say, that have committed to coming. So at this point in time, I'm hoping we'll be able to fill the 125 horses that we have a lot of the event for. I don't have any exact numbers now, but once registration opens, hopefully we'll start seeing a good number pretty quickly.
Wonderful. And are you maxing out the event?
Yes. This year, being the first year of the event, we are limiting it to 125 horses.
That's a good size.
Yeah, that's plenty to start with. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's exciting in particular, because I know, you know, I've entertained a lot of questions from various parts of the standardbred industry about starting a standardbred makeover. Not that they're asking, you know, us at RRP to do it, but, you know, they're asking just for advice. And it's a big task to take on to sort of start one from scratch, as I'm sure you're finding, you know, as you go.
Yes.
Starting an event from scratch is tough. And there's all sorts of issues that come up that you never thought about. So, you know, there's I'm sure, you know, obviously we're here to answer questions for you too. If you guys run into issues along the way, we're happy to share. But one thing I saw that I really thought was cool is that you guys are doing a vet in process, you know, that looks similar-ish, but different in its own way, you know, from the Makeovers Arrival exam. So what made you want to include that as part of the process for this show?
Yeah, so the vet in to us is really important, again, in the fact that the main thing in this event is we're really emphasizing the horsemanship of things. And to us, that high level of horsemanship is really showing focus on the horse above the competition itself. And we really want this event to kind of be a positive demonstration of retired racehorses for other competitors, but also for the community. You know, a big goal here is for us to show the racing industry that it is important that these horses retire healthy and that we can help them into their next careers. So we want to make sure that they're ready for those two intensive days of competition, because like we mentioned earlier, the horses can compete in up to 5 events, which means they're going to be probably riding 2 to 3 classes a day. And we really want to make sure that they're ready for that. And then that process would be a general vitals check, a basic lameness exam, and then a body score requirement.
Nice. Yeah. I think that's, you know, that's as important for the equestrian industry as the racing industry, right? To show like, you know, a horse doesn't have to be that, right. That's a common misconception. Like, oh, well, he's a thoroughbred in his first year of retraining. So of course he looks a little thin. It's like, well, that's not necessarily, you know, the truth. So that's that vet in process kind of checks boxes for both industries, which I think is great. So very cool. Where can listeners who want to learn more about this show, where can they find you guys on the internet and social media?
So we have a great website that Axionica designed called MidwestRacehorseRoundup.com. And then they can also check out our Facebook page as well as Midwest Racehorse Roundup. And we'll be sharing information on both locations.
Nice. And you want to give us a quick rundown on like eligibility, like who's eligible, and then the timeline for when people can get involved?
Yeah. So we have 2 classes of horses. One will be the Green Horse Division, which will be any horse that had a published work or race in the United States or Canada after January 1st of 2022 up until 2024. And then there'll be an open division, which will be any horse who raced or had a published work prior to January 1st, 2022. So we're really trying to open it up to, you know, the green horses that are recently off the track, and then also the ones who have been off the track for a while.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. So that, you know, the greener ones don't have to compete against a horse that's been, you know, out doing his second career now, maybe for 10 years. That's
correct.
Yeah, I like it. Cool. And then what's your timeline? When can people start to register for this event?
They can actually start registering this Friday, March 1st.
All right. Awesome. Okay. And this episode is coming out on March 10th. So if you're hearing this now and you're thinking you want to get registered, like go do it. Get registered right now and then let us know so we can cheer you on. That's really exciting. And I see you guys have guaranteed 10,000 in prize money, which is awesome. Do you have plans for more special awards? I know you mentioned before, you know, the breed industries and the tracks getting involved. So is there the possibility that number might go up?
Yes, definitely. As more sponsorships come in, we would be looking at increasing prize money if available. We also are going to have special awards of honoring the most versatile horse. So horses who compete in all 5 events are then placed against each other for the most versatile horse award in the open and green horse division. And then overall, we'd be selecting a top versatile horse of both divisions. In addition, any special awards we get in from farms, racetracks, breed associations, we're willing to calculate the points for those.
Very cool. Yeah. So this could really like put North Dakota on the map as a retired racehorse destination, which I think is really, really cool. And I hope that we see representation, you know, from all the racing breeds, you know, because it is a little harder to find like those retired racing paint horses, you know, as an example. Right. So that'd be really cool to see some, you know, pretty spotted horses running around. They race Appaloosas too, right?
Yes, there's actually, I have a friend who's in Minnesota and they race Appaloosas and she is super excited to hopefully attend. So we might have some spotted horses going on there.
Oh, this is going to be one of the most colorful racehorse competitions.
I think it's going to be so fun.
This is going to be great.
you know, it's not just going to be bays and chestnuts for once.
Yeah, all the standard bred people are like, what's wrong with bays? ladies, this is super cool. We are looking forward to following the journey, you know, of this event as you guys develop it further and hopefully cheering on 125 retired racehorses coming out to try their mettle in North Dakota. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, it is that time of the episode that we bring back on New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program. And this week we have Winnie Morgan Nima joining us from the standard bred side of things. Welcome back, Winnie.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. I know last time we had you, we got to talk about the book you and your mom put together, which, oh my gosh, has been such a treat to see all the positive response online. And I know it's just going to help a ton of people with their standard breds and helping them come to their full, like, flowering potential in their second careers. Like, and I love that standard breds are starting to get more exposure than they used to get. So just like, I want to thank you and your mom for putting that together. And that is Tracked Trail, if anyone's interested to look that up. But today we have a training question. I know Kristen is dying to ask you.
Okay. Hopefully not literally, although some days it feels like it. Yeah, I'm running this question past everyone and picking everyone's brains. And anyone who's been following along on Retired Resource Radio social media is also familiar with this question. My guys, we're down to just three horses, and all three of them, two thoroughbreds and one standardbred, are just starting to get buddy sour just because the herd has been consistently shrinking over the past few years. And now we're just down to three. So it's a little difficult because, you know, I'm there for an hour or two every day, and the other 22 hours or so, they're just left to their own devices together. So it's a hard one to fight. Do you have any tips or tricks for me to help me, you know, teach them that it's okay to be alone sometimes?
Sure. So my first question would be, when you say you have three horses, are they all the same? Are they all geldings? Are they mares? Or do you have a mixed herd?
Nope, they're all geldings ranging from 10 to 20.
Okay. And then are they, do you have them, are they turned out in the field together or are they just stalled together?
Nope, they're turned out and they're turned out 24/7. So they come in to eat and then they're kicked right back out again. So yeah, lots of time to hang out together, unfortunately.
And so when do you have the most issues? Like what causes the herd bound? Is it when you take one away to go ride them alone?
Weirdly, they're all pretty good. If I take one out to ride, the one that goes out to ride is usually pretty good. And I've learned over the years that, you know, I start small and close to the barn in the spring when I'm getting them legged up. I don't go, you know, way out in the pasture, far, far away on the first day. You know, so I found a good method that works for that. But what I'm trying to do, because my husband also likes to ride with me in the summer, is have one horse be left alone at the barn.
And yes. That's the problem. Difficult.
Yeah, that one's like, wait, where are you going?
So. Yes, yes. One thing my mom, Dot, always said when we were growing up, it's always the one left behind that has the problem. It's not the horse leaving. It's the one, the one horse. That is a very difficult scenario for sure. And I don't know that I have a lot of good tips for that. I can just say, usually our standardbreds are really good at leaving. But I think any horse, just because they're herd animals, like to have a buddy. And if they think their friends are leaving, they do all kind of panic. I don't think it's amongst all breeds.
Right.
So that is a little bit more difficult versus, you know, like you want to take your horse and go ride. Most standardbreds are great to go away because they don't always jog in groups. Like they train alone. They ship alone sometimes. Some of them do ship with groups. So they're usually good by themselves, or getting on the trailer alone doesn't tend to get them rattled by any means. But it is hard when you have like three friends like yours. They're out all the time together. They're buddies. Sometimes it's better when you have like four horses versus three, the odd number, because somebody's always going to be left out. I would just say it's always good that one, they can see what you're doing. You mentioned staying close to the barn. So you and your husband go ride. Maybe you're riding around the perimeter of the field. I'm not sure. You have an arena, but if that horse could see you and then maybe you could, you know, put them in the cross ties or they can at least see where you're going, that tends to help a lot. And another thing that tends to help for nervous horses that don't like to be alone, and this is an old racetrack thing, and that is getting a goat, which you probably don't want to get. But I can tell you what we've learned with the standardbreds and having a buddy like a goat, it one helps them eat when they're nervous and don't want to eat, and it helps them with their confidence because they have a buddy to rely on if that is an issue that they're facing. They don't want to be alone. They don't want to travel alone. So when we had our racehorses and we had this issue, we always had a goat or two that would stick with that horse. And when that horse sold, guess what? That goat went with that horse. And they had a really great relationship. So I don't know if you want to get something like that, like a goat that might help your little buddy.
Do it, Kristen. Do it for the content and write it off.
We just got rid of all the goats. Gosh.
You just need a new one. It'll be great.
But it is. That's a really difficult question that a lot of people do have problems with. But most of the time it's getting that one horse to leave his buddies. They don't want to go out on the trail by themselves. They don't, you know, where it's better to go out with two. But the horse is always, you know, by himself. He's usually nickering and he's upset. Sometimes if you put him in a stall, give him some grain, give him some hay, you know, something to take their mind off of it, turn a radio on so they've got some noise. You know, that stuff always helps as well. But that is definitely a issue that many people do tend to face when they have three horses like that.
Yeah. And like, definitely it's like the, we could just get a fourth. And then, you know, inevitably somebody will come and ride the third horse. We'll be like, well, shoot, now we need a fifth, you know? So suddenly we're back up to like eight horses again or something crazy. Yeah. But what I've been doing is, you know, we bring in all three, or we'll bring in the two, get them saddled. And then the last one out of the barn brings in the third one and ties him up with a little grain and some hay. Mm-hmm. And that's usually worked pretty well. I think what we're going to do in the summer is bring all the horses down to the little winter corral where they live in the wintertime. And, you know, the third leftover horse will at least be in a smaller space. So he's not out, you know, panic running over 10 to 20 acres.
Yes.
That pen is also adjacent to the cow barn. So at least they have other animals.
Well, that's present. What I was going to say. Yes. But at least there's something like they see, obviously your horses are used to cattle from what I've seen on your post. So that too. So there's another, but you know, they might help them get a little security. So they're not like panicking alone in a barn and having a meltdown.
Yeah. And out of the three of them, the standardbred is the best one. And I mean, again, this is purely speculation, but he's been so good left alone. But I wonder if he, you know, we've talked about him before. He likely came from an Amish situation. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he was the sole horse because he just sort of seems content being alone or being with the cattle, which is actually quite funny in the summer because you'll sort of lose him in the
herd
of Angus. And you're like, where's Wes? Oh, there he is. So he seems to be the best adjusted, although I think he's now getting attached because I've heard him make the most noise he's ever made in his life, which is not a lot of noise, but it's a very sad sort of hello. when they come back again. So you know, headed off at the pass before it gets worse, I think, is where we're at.
Right.
But yeah, well, maybe a goat. Oh boy.
If you get a goat, I'm gonna be so excited. And I'm gonna live vicariously through you.
You know how fast Jobber will kill a goat? That's a terrible idea. I shouldn't do that.
No, that goat's gonna take on Jobber. It's gonna be fine. I do have a question though, because I feel like my mare sometimes she's keen to hang out with me until she feels like it's an inconvenience. And by that, I mean, it's like Saturday morning. Like she likes to have the morning to herself. And I have probably created this problem. I'm like, yeah, you have that time to yourself. I'll come later. So when I come to get her in the morning, we are not thrilled to be the only ones in the barn. She doesn't mind working. Like that's not the problem. It's the standing and having to wait patiently to be groomed and tacked and all that stuff. We scream for our buddies.
Oh, yes.
Any tips on that scenario? Because that's probably also a common one for many horse owners.
Yes. You have a mare, correct?
Mm-hmm.
They are a little more emotional, typically. is she out with geldings?
No, we keep them all separate.
Oh, well, that's good. Because I would say that usually can cause the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Again, I like to say if you're like in a boarding situation, is there any way that there's horses in that she could see?
Occasionally, does like sometimes help? If they're there, I mean, with winter, I feel like I'm there alone a lot of times. Like we have a lot of fair weather riders, or they go to Florida with our head trainer.
Right.
So in the winter, it's a little tougher. In the nice weather, you're almost guaranteed to have somebody out there. Mm-hmm. So that does make a difference. She's not particularly attached to like a different individual horse, which is super nice. It's more of a matter of why is everyone else out and I'm in? And I think it would be the same if she was the only one out and everyone else was in.
Sure.
She gets FOMO.
Yes. And some of that just is her being emotional and she's a mare. I don't really have a lot of good ideas for that other than I never recommend mixing the herds. Mm-hmm. We always like when people are getting approved, make sure, you know, we don't have a gelding going with mares. Just because our horses are so new to being out mm-hmm. with another horse. So to do that just isn't really fair, to the horse. But a lot of times, again, just being that they're herd animals, they are used to being with a buddy and they're at the racetrack, they have horses all around them all the time. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that they would not see another horse on the track or walking to and from the barn. Again, they usually ship fine on their own, at least the standard res do, because they are shipped to the racetrack. Most of them, they don't live at the racetrack. So they get on and off the trailer, no problem by themselves, but it's hard once they become a horse and in a boarding situation and they want to see a friend. So I don't know if they could see, if your mare could see a friend or you had a friend bring their horse in, if that settles her down a little bit. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I should get a cardboard cutout of another horse and keep it around. That might be, I might just do that for content just to see what happens. She feels secure with that horse in there.
I know. It's hard. Even my daughter's show horse, and he's a gelding. He's 14 years old. He doesn't go out with other horses. But when it's like, if it's a storm's coming in the barn, mm-hmm. it's raining, it's windy, and we're riding in the indoor by ourselves, he will do his job, no problem. He won't mess up, but he will nicker under his breath because he can't see other horses or he's nervous. I'm not sure, but he doesn't do anything bad. She can do her lesson and he just nickers under his breath. I don't know. I don't get it.
So it sounds like more than like training the behavior out. It's more like being understanding and reassuring them is the path we should be taking.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's hard to train it out, I think. Yeah. I think it's like a work with it and make allowances, but also do what you can to keep yourself safe too. So,
yeah. Don't be afraid to lunge. If it's a lunge day, friends, and they're dirty lunging, just do it. It's okay.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to get their mind on something else. That's for sure. Yeah. And that's one good thing to just get saddled up, get your bridle on and go. Don't dilly dally around. Don't sit there and pet them. Like do what you want to do. Do what your goal was to get on and go. Because a lot of times that's, again, going back to the racehorses, that's what they know. You know, we got a job. Okay, we're going to go do it. Because I remind a lot of adopters, there's a lot of days these horses don't want to go out to the racetrack, but that's not an option. There's a lot of days the weather's bad. They don't want to go on the track. Not an option. These horses are trained 6 days a week. they're not coddled in it's a little muddy today. And you're grumpy and pinned your ears back at me. We're not going to go train today. Doesn't work like that.
Are you suggesting I coddled my horse, Winnie?
I was going to say, what I'm hearing is we are the problem. Yes.
We are the problem.
Well, a lot of times these issues are created by adopters who mean well and love their horses. But if, these horses that are in a professional program, guess what? They don't get the option. They just keep on going.
Winnie's just over here reading us for filth. My gosh.
Right. I know.
Speaking of me getting a fourth horse, let's just go ahead and take a look at our adoptable horse before I take him home to fix all of my problems. Yeah,
that's another solution to the problem.
Winnie, you have chosen to share with us this absolute dreamboat, Call Me Kinger. Tell us a little bit more about him. He's so cool looking.
So Call Me Kinger just finished racing in Monticello, New York, with some great trainers and an owner that has sent new vocations their horses for probably 15 years. We've had a wonderful relationship with them. They take excellent care of their horses. And Call Me Kinger was retired because of a breathing issue and that he just could not, when he was going fast, couldn't get the breath that he needed. And so he did have throat surgery, which is very, very common. Most racehorses have had that done. It's not something you're going to see, but he still just wasn't fast enough. So they decided to retire him. He only raced 42 times. He's a 2019 gelding and he stands 17 hands. He's a big boy and he's just been a delight to be around and work with. Amanda and her team have done a fantastic job with him. And she was asking, I think there's three videos online of him, if she thought he looked like he should be a dressage horse. So they threw the white bandages on him and did all that. And he looks super cute. And that's only probably his third ride in that video, because you can just tell he's a little unsure about what he's doing. But he has so much potential, you know, being he has not had any injuries. He has not had any lamenesses, nothing. Purely just, you know, breathing issue when he's going at fast speeds, and nobody would ever ask him to go that fast ever. So very, very nice horse. He's well-bred and he's been just a joy to have.
Oh yeah. The white wraps were an excellent choice. Holy
moly. Yeah. I thought so too. Like, he looks so cute.
Dancing along. Okay. Yeah. This is like tall, dark, and handsome. Like, this is a true black. I know a lot of people like label their thoroughbreds like, oh, he's black. And it's like, yeah, that's a dark bay. Like, we can tell. This horse is black. Like, if you want like the like eye-catching, tall, dark, sexy horse at the showgrounds, like, this is the one.
Yeah, 17.
Yes. I don't know if you're allowed
tall
to say
drink
that
of water
website, but yeah, like, Kinger, sexy.
And he's tall. I mean, I know a lot of people that want a 17 hand horse. Well, they're hard to find, but this one is. And I would say he could still grow because he's very young. Standardbreds tend to grow until they're like 7 or 8. He's a big guy, but he's very kind and he's been very gentle and wonderful to work with. Just a dream. I know Amanda is just super excited about him. So he's got a lot of potential.
I love his uphill build. Like, his neck comes just perfectly out of his shoulders. I'm like, if you get him to just round out, like, you're going to have everyone like stunned. Like, is that a warm blood or is that a standard bread?
Exactly. Yes. No, for sure.
Oh, he's so, got that, like, that great standard bread profile too. Like, just, I don't, there's something about their faces and I still can't quite put my finger on what it is, but they just have that look and he has
it's like
it.
Wisdom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think maybe because he's actually related. So he's a Western Terror, and Western Terror is a Western Hanover, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Yeah,
yes.
The same little look that Wes gets, although this horse is way bigger. Wes is like 15 hands if he's dreaming. So
on a good day.
Yeah. On a tall day. So this horse could straddle Wes and be like, hello, little friend. So, oh yeah. Yes. All right. I'll just throw this in and then nice. Fix all of my problems.
And there you go. Well, and if I'm not mistaken too, Winnie, we met with Leandra last episode to talk about the new leveling system. So all the new levels apply to the standardbreds too?
Correct. That's correct.
Wonderful. So he has excellent leveling, in my opinion, for anyone who's looking for their first off the track, ready to bring on themselves. Like, you guys give them a wonderful foundation. We never say that they're ready just to enter everything and anything, but he's definitely got the personality to have a good running start.
Definitely. Yes, he does.
Love it. Well, you can check him out at newvocations.org or horseadoption.com. And he is going for the just astronomical price of $3,500. Like, you have a warm blood looking horse for $3,500. Stop. It's practically free. Thank you again, Winnie, for joining us. We so appreciate it. We can't wait to see who adopts Call Me Kinger. It's going to be Kristen. And hear all about his adventures. And until next time, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Joy, I really enjoyed this episode. Getting to speak with Sissy Wicks is always a good time, and we definitely need to have her back on to just talk about all things thoroughbred and all the changes she's seen over the decades. But also, too, I'm looking forward to hearing more about this Midwest Racehorse Roundup. What did you learn today?
I'm also excited for the Midwest Racehorse Roundup. I think it's a very cool concept. And I think it's something that just allows more people to get involved. We know how popular the Thoroughbred Makeover is, but we also know Lexington isn't always the most convenient place. So to have another show available that's open to not just Thoroughbreds, but any retired racehorse, I think it's going to be really cool to see unfold. Learned a lot about hunters too. Honestly, I've never competed in it, but I feel like I have a whole new appreciation for the sport, knowing more what they're looking for. Dressage people, don't come after me. It's like, I'm seeing that we can all be friends here, and that's pretty cool.
For sure. Well, and this is exactly what we wanted to do in this podcast, was to, you know, touch on retraining for all racehorses and then also help, you know, all of us who are listening and all struggling on the same journey, just find a way to move forward. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram, just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram at The Horseback Rider and on Facebook at Jobber Bill, Racehorse to Ranch Horse. My email is kbentley@therrp.org.
You can find me on Instagram at MisfitMare, and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and Cashel Company, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, at horseradionetwork.com. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride.
And add more leg.
Bye, guys.